talk about tweets and take a quiz so we can find out who the smartest one is. What happened this week in Survivor?
Yeah, that's right. This week in Survivor, that was your friend and mine, the great Will from America, to take us into another round of This Week in Survivor. Here with me, a man who puts it all together every week for the This Week in Survivor History quiz, the great Jordan Kalish. Jordan, how are you?
Doing pretty well. We're back for another week, another big week for
baby
Tony Vlachos, which is always a happy time for me. So I'm doing pretty well. How about you, Rob?
Yeah, doing good. Exciting week. Great week of podcasting. I hope we can keep it going. I really enjoyed my time talking with Ozzy the other day, and that had been a real highlight for me to get my long-awaited sit-down interview with Ozzy, and then had a really nice time on the feedback show yesterday talking with the great Shannon Gus of International Survivor fame. So very excited to be back here with you, and of course, our guest here today, one of my favorites to get to talk to, here she is, the great host of the Kowski Cast, talking about Riverdale and much more. Here she is, the great Frail Mary, Mary Kwiatkowski.
Hi, how's it going, everybody? I'm so excited to get to talk some Winners at War. I obviously was bummed that I was not spending this week with everyone, and that was the original plan, but you know, we're all getting through it in our own way, and at least Survivor's still on to enjoy that.
Yep. In an alternate universe, yes, we are all together in Atlanta this past week, very jet lagged from that trip. But who knows if we would have gotten as good of a season in that alternate timeline, Mary?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's butterfly effect. So one thing changes, and it's even worse than that, because if there was no coronavirus, somehow that could have altered the show that had already been recorded and filmed a long time ago, right?
In that alternate timeline is in one of the sci-fi books that Ozzy is reading. So we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, Mary, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Trying to optimize this amount of time that I have where I can be a loner, so that's always good.
What are you doing to optimize that time? Are you working on ways to improve yourself? Are you writing fan fiction? What are you doing?
Well, I definitely have taken up rereading fan fiction, so there is that. I feel like that's the first step, right? Read it, and then you get frustrated with it.
What kind of fan fiction do you reread?
Well, I have to read Riverdale fan fiction for research purposes, obviously, for the podcast. So there's been a lot of that going on. Find out more on Kowski Cast. Do a little segment there called Fan Fiction Corner. But yeah, I was doing that. And then I doing some puzzles until the puzzles ran out. And then, you know, the trick with puzzles are if you finish all of the puzzles, you just flip it over and it's like hardcore puzzle.
Oh, wow. Well, how many piece puzzles do you do?
I like the 1,000 piece. Sweet spot. You go bigger than that, it's just too crazy. And I don't like the ones that are like a painting. Come on, you know, give me sharp lines, give me cartoons, give me people, something that you can easily identify. So been doing a lot of Star Wars puzzles. And then I took up knitting because just in time for the summer, obviously, you know, that's great.
Yeah, Mary, we actually are working on a 500-piece puzzle, a map of the United States with all of the different logos of the baseball teams. So that's been a big project over here.
Great. And then you could study that. Now, I just realized the other day I'm terrible with geography. Me and some other people, I know Kirsten was one of them, we took a little break to do a map of the United States quiz on BuzzFeed or a Sporkle or something. And let me just say that the person in Canada may or may not have gotten more states correct than I did.
Okay. So, all right. Well, that is a smart person in Canada that you're talking about. So maybe you just picked the wrong opponent to go to head tip top toes in the death match with about US geography.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I could do with a puzzle for myself. I don't know if the baseball teams would help, but that's something.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on here in the world of Survivor. And so Mary, a bunch of different things to get into with you, because I do think that you have a lot of unconventional opinions. And so I want to explore some of them where that you were telling us pre-show that you actually have a very small blind spot in your Survivor history where you had not seen Survivor One World coming into this season.
Well, I did go back and watch it, but it is the one season I didn't see live. I watched it. I think I watched it after listening to the Evolution of Strategy, because I didn't even know that Kim was considered a great winner. You know, when you go into that discussion, I always thought people would be discussing between, I don't know, Richard Hatch or Rob or Tom or somebody like that. And then I started hearing online, oh, well, it's, you know, it's Rob or Kim. I'm like, who is this Kim person? Because look, let me just take you back in time to
not so Kim.
No, well, right. When One World was on, that was, I think when I was in like junior or senior year of high school, and I was doing my own thing. I had my first boyfriend. I was busy. I started watching the first couple episodes, and I got to the point where they had the male tribe had elected to go to tribal council themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided I'm out on this season. I'm tired of all these hot people who don't know the game. And I never went back and rewatched it until, you know, like a couple years ago. So
okay.
That was my thing. But, you know, and Kim was fine on the rewatch. She did great. I'm not here to get hate from people. Look, everybody loves Kim. That's fine. I'm just giving you the perspective of somebody who was not in the bubble of knowing that she was a great player and just sort of watched it once and that was it.
Okay. So coming in with that specific background, okay, obviously this is Kim's boot episode this week. What did you make of Kim's game this season without having that previous background top of mind?
So I thought that she was in a kind of unfortunate spot of, and I know this had been mentioned a lot on the podcast, of the fans really liked her, but maybe the other players hadn't thought of her as being this huge, obvious target just because, I don't know, like appearance-wise, she didn't look that way. And mostly she was targeted in this season because of her real-life friendships and the, you know, poker alliance and all that. So it was unfortunate that she was in that position where she can't even claim to be someone like Rob or Parvati and say, oh, keep me around because I'm such a big target, because people on the season didn't even seem to really view her with that lens. There's more like you're just associated with these old school big target players, which is interesting considering she didn't play. I mean, I don't know. I guess you're calling her the middle school sort of era. So mm-hmm. She's not even really an old school player. But I feel like she never really had a chance this season. If she had been on the other tribe in the beginning, I could have seen her maybe pairing more up with Parvati or even Michelle or someone like that. But I do think her missed opportunity was the Sandra vote, which you can't really even blame her for. I mean, she had an idol at that point. So unless she was going to somehow idol Sandra to save Sandra as well, that would be the only, but you know, she was so out of the loop on that. That's just a complete alternate universe.
I just want to make sure I have correct what you're saying. So you're saying that the missed opportunity was for Denise to idle Tony out of the game, or for, because I mean, she was a swing vote on that vote. I mean, that there was some talk from, you know, Jeremy and Denise were trying to get Kim. I thought originally when we first got the episode with the swap, I thought that Kim was going to flip and vote against Tony and Sandra. Is that the missed opportunity?
Yeah, well, but I mean, it is, but it's only the missed opportunity knowing what we know now. If I was Kim in that time and place, I wouldn't have made a move like that necessarily, because it was too early. And you're right, you're in this swing vote spot, but you're in a swing vote spot pre-merge. Mm-hmm. And do you really want to use that social capital now? And if she had done something like that or used her idol in that way, it would have also, you know, I don't think you can argue that that's like what she should have done in the moment, but I do think that that is, knowing that she's going to leave and knowing that she probably could have benefited from having Sandra stay around longer.
Mm-hmm.
that would have been better. But, you know, there's that. There's all this stuff that went down with the Tyson vote, which could have gone differently, but there's not much she could have done, you know, besides guessing differently on that vote. But
right. Jordan, something that Mary said I thought was interesting about how that, you know, Kim came into the game as sort of like with a big target, sort of known by the other players for having such a great game. But unlike the Robs and other figures like Parvati, that there wasn't really a lot of talk of, you know, oh, Kim could be a shield for me. And I think that she also tried to go like the opposite direction as opposed to some of the other players that were like, you know, willing to be used as a shield. I feel like that Kim came in with this reputation and tried to get back under the radar.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think part of the reason that she wasn't thought of as a major target is that she comes from Survivor One World, which is not looked at as one of the premier seasons in Survivor history, to say the least. I think when you have Boston Rob, who even though his winning season isn't a great season, he has played on Heroes versus Villains and Marquesas, and he's an old school Survivor player. You have Parvati, who's played on Micronesia. You have Antoni, who won Survivor Cagayan. I think these players who have won the premier seasons that people really remember are the ones that are being looked at as these major targets. And they just, you know, some of these guys who were old school players come in just as bigger marquee names. So I think Kim did earn that reputation by the way that she won One World, but she wasn't necessarily looked at as having that reputation by the other players. And I do think though, like it was hard for her to ever really gain traction in this game. I think that she didn't come in with a lot of, you know, pre-game relationships with people. It was hard for her to have close allies early on. And you see her finally starting to make close alliances with, you know, Michelle and with Denise. But I think her biggest mistake, if you you want to like look at the reason that why she goes home here, there's the Tyson vote where she plays her idol on Denise. I think if she had played that idol on herself, you could look at that and say, okay, even though she didn't need to, it was a crazy vote. You have Jeremy using the safety without power. She could have been the person who got the votes there. But once you use it on somebody else, when the other side had the numbers to split the vote, it made absolutely no sense. To me, it was just a waste of the idol that she could have used here.
Well, the thing with Kim also is that you have to look at how she won her previous season. And I'm not even exactly saying like the level of competitors, but just the type of people who were on that game. You know, Rob sort of had the same issue here in this season of when you play a winning game and your game is very much like being a leader and, you know, whether you're controlling or manipulating, or in Kim's case, more just being the level-headed person that everyone trusts. And then you play a game with all winners who are, you know, much more diverse in their styles and are not going to step in line or desire to be following a leader in any kind of way, she's going to have to change her game. And so she wasn't going to be able to play a similar game to the one she won. And so you're right, she did come in and kind of go under the radar, which because she's a big name and she's a great player, but she did not try to say, oh, I'm a threat, so we need to keep the threats together. She also didn't change it up enough to say, I need to find a partner. You know, I think her best move in this game would have been coming in and saying, I need to completely disavow this Amber and Tyson and whatever right at the beginning, get in with Sophie somehow right at the beginning. And I know she tried that with the idol, but maybe if she'd done it day one instead of, you know, day five or six or whenever that was. So I think that would have been the only way she could have really tried to say, like, we need to get a partnership going with a couple people or a girls alliance or something like that where she can fit in more rather than trying to play the same game she did before.
Now, Mary, do you feel like that Kim did poorly enough here that when she comes back for a third time, now will people not be out to get Kim?
I think that just completely depends on who she plays with. If she plays with new people, I think Kim could easily win again in a new player scenario or a fans versus favorite scenario. I think she could even potentially win again if she was playing with other people who were just non-winners. That, you know, I think it's very circumstantial of her coming back with the all winners. There are certain winners who said, you know, the only time I'd ever come back would be if it was all winners. I think Kim is a winner who needs to only come back with non-winners.
Okay. Because I think that that's going to be the question that we're going to look back at. You know, if Tony goes on for more success, Jordan, did Tony tank Game Changers to be in optimal position for his third time out?
No, I don't think Tony intentionally tanked Game Changers. I mean, I think we actually had this talk. It may have been with Antonio last week, where that was maybe the best thing that could have happened to him, because even if he made the merge, there's no way he's winning Game Changers. But I don't think he tanked it on purpose.
He tanked the season.
He didn't tank the season. Like he was like being crazy Tony out there because that was like the only way he knew at the time, and it did not work out, which is I think helping him in this season. But I don't think it was an intentional tank. What I will say though, going back to Kim, I was actually very impressed with the way that Kim played the season. I did point out what I think was her biggest mistake before, but I think all in all, like in this episode, she was the one person really banging the drum. We need to get rid of Tony because Tony is too powerful in this game. He has Jeremy, he has Sarah. I think the mistake was potentially, you know, not necessarily for her because she was sort of in, she had to sort of be in anyone but me mode at that point. And the only other name coming up was Jeremy. But I think maybe the other people made a mistake by not either getting rid of Jeremy or Sarah there and then trying to work with Kim, you know, as far as you can, probably not going to the end with her because I think that could be a mistake to go to the end of the game with Kim Spradlin. But I think the players like the Michelles and the Denises, Nick and Ben, like they have to see how powerful Tony and Sarah are as a duo. And once Tony became immune, I think that Sarah should have been the vote. Or if not Sarah, then Jeremy, who Tony has now saved on back-to-back votes.
Okay. Mary, talk to me a little bit about Tony, because I feel like that you have been, from what we've discussed, somebody maybe that not as goo-goo gaga for Tony as some.
Yeah, I like Tony.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, it is. I'm not a Tony hater.
You're no Kalish when it comes to the unabashed Tony enthusiasm.
Right. Look, and again, I think a lot of this just comes from I was not in the online Survivor community during Kageon, so some of my people that I like, it comes from a casual perspective, which is weird. I'm like I was a casual super fan for a long time until I became an actual online super fan or whatever. But during that season, I was, you know, with the general public who was like, Tony's crazy and Spencer's the hero here that we're supposed to support. So that was where my mind was at. And again, much like with Kim, I didn't know that Tony was beloved by people online. I thought Tony would have been like, wow, how did he, you know, crazy his way into this win? Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And, you know, you should congratulate him and it's surprising. But I am always of the opinion of like, if you can do something more efficiently, then that's like the way that I give that more credit than I'm going to make a bunch of mistakes and then constantly having to be correcting those mistakes. So like when I see someone win and be able to do it in such a clean fashion, it just makes it seem easier and a little bit more like they had a handle on everything the whole time. Where I mean, you know, Tony had a handle. He was just also making a mess of things and, you know, making mistakes. So he's a unicorn and he's interesting and he's entertaining, but I don't necessarily, like, I would not rank his Kageon win as, I don't know where I put it. I mean, I put it like, you know, top half, but probably not top third, maybe. I mean, you know, don't come for me, people. Look, you can love Tony, and I can think that Tony is just fine. He's a decent player.
To be fair, as much as I love Tony, and I did love like throughout Kageon, I was so entertained by him the whole time. And Rob and I have even done a podcast on the 11 things I love about Tony. But I never thought that he was going to win until Wu took him to the end. There was never a point in that game where I thought Tony was going to be the winner of that season. And I think in his winning game, he made more mistakes than he's made so far on this season. And I actually, you know, looking at the players left in the game and looking at the players on the edge of extinction, I would put Tony in the number one spot in terms of who has the best chance to win, both based on the edit and also based on the relationships he has left in the game. But going back to Kageon, I mean, I thought that Spencer was going to win for a long time. I even thought once Tony lost the final immunity that that Wu was going to be Cass, even though I think that if I were a juror, I probably would have voted for Cass. So definitely would have voted for Cass over Wu. But I even thought Tasha had a chance. I thought like even early on in the merge that maybe LJ had a chance. I never thought Tony was going to win that season. And it was because of some of the crazy things that he did that were great TV, but not necessarily great Survivor play.
Can I share a interesting take that I got on our Facebook Friday, which I do with the patrons, the call-in show where the patrons call me. We have a great caller, Zach from Georgia is his name, and he had asked me that, do you think that is this an apt comparison that has Tony turned Jeremy into his new Spencer? Which I feel like that idea, Jeremy would find that horrifying. But Jordan, do you see Tony looking at Jeremy in the same way that he once was working and using the young lad?
I think it's a fantastic comparison. I mean, he and Jeremy haven't always been together in the same voting together, or even in the same alliance, when they entered the merge on every single vote. But I think it's a really good comparison where he sees Jeremy as like the, you know, the strategist, a guy who everyone, you know, I think likes and respects. And I'm talking about, you know, we'll put Cambodia aside. Obviously, the jury wasn't so thrilled with Spencer's game. But I think in Kagyan, they really liked his come from the bottom story. But I could even extrapolate on this more, where if Jeremy's the Spencer, I think that Sarah has sort of become his Trish, who he has lied to, he's flipped on, but it seems like she's back with him. And then maybe either Nick or Ben is the Woo. I think Ben might be the Woo based on the fact that Ben was the one who first told him that Kim was coming after him.
Okay. Mary, what do you make of all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I don't fault Tony's Game Changers game at all, because I think that he was a character more so than a, great player in his first season. And so then in a second season, he's, got to come in and be the character again. This time around, I certainly want to clarify that I feel like this game is, 50 times better than he played in Kagyan, and I'm very impressed with him this season, and certainly getting the best of both worlds of him being a goofy character and actually showing some of his chops here. I think that comparison with, Trish and Wu and Ben and Sarah is pretty good. I don't think that Sarah would necessarily appreciate that, because I almost feel like Sarah was in that her own sort of Tony position, or, more accurately, Sarah was in the position Sarah was in during Game Changers. It just so happens that the person she had wanted to be her, Brad, kind of had a mind of his own. It turned out it was Tony. So that was the problem there. I just don't know if I could ever forgive Tony for getting rid of Sophie, but it happened.
Yeah.
If Sarah is able to cut Tony and get to the end, and she wins, then that puts her back over the top in terms of who I think played the best game. I think right now it's between the two of them. And if, I would have a very hard time. I mean, I don't know if Tony's going to, I would love to see Tony get to the end. I can see at any point them all trying to cut him, because they know how strong of a game he's playing. It would, to me, it would be an amazing outcome if Tony gets to the end. And I don't think there's any chance that he loses if he does. But if Sarah's able to get to cut Tony and she gets to the end, it would mean that she has played the best game, and she probably would deserve to win in that final three scenario. But we'll see what happens. I mean, it's just, it's amazing to me to think that we're at the final eight, and not only is Tony still in the game, he's probably in the most powerful position right now.
Do you think that he wins over anyone, including the people at Edge of Extinction, if he went to the end with them?
That's the wild card.
It is the wild card. I keep saying that, I can't imagine a jury of winners voting for the person on the edge, but I also have to look at what happened the last time there was an edge. And when you have the whole jury living with this person for like if it's Natalie the whole game, or if Parvati most of the game, the only three people I could see coming back at this point, unless it's someone who's already been voted out, I could see it be, or sorry, unless it's somebody who has not been voted out yet, just based on the edit, I could see Boston Rob coming back. I could see Parvati coming back, and I could see Natalie coming back. And they've all been on the edge for a really long time. So who knows? If they come back into the game, maybe a jury of winners would vote for them to win. But I don't want to have to imagine that. I think that if Tony gets to the end, it's his. I just think he has a tough road to get there.
One other thing that I had on Tony and his relationship with Sarah, Mary, after they got back from the challenge, Tony, I guess, was a little sore, but he started teasing Sarah about how, hey, she could win an immunity every now and then.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yo, you got heavy hands, man.
That hurt?
Yeah, that hurt.
Yeah. So I just thought that was funny that Tony seemed like Sarah really, you know, Sarah used to be a fighter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, Sarah, I'm sure, had her own wrestling parties back in the day and can hold her own in that way.
Wrestling parties?
Yeah. That, I don't know. That was a reference the last time I was on Twitch. So sorry. I'm just self-referencing myself. It's fine.
Yes. Well, what were the wrestling parties? Refresh my memory.
I think this came up last season when who was it? Missy and Elaine were wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like Sarah. It's that.
Oh, you got heavy hands.
Yeah, look, I don't know. Maybe Tony, he's just trying to get Sarah back on his good side and be her Tyson and joke around and all that. But I think we saw a bit of Sarah's frustration with Tony when they were doing the the fashion show, and you know, and she's like, I just don't think Tony gets my game. But I like to think that Tony was calling her out on that. Her heavy hands more of to say, like, I'm watching you and I feel like you can win challenges. You're still a threat in this game. I don't know. I just read into everything of, like, at any point.
So you feel like that Tony was, like, trying to give her self-confidence in that, like, that she's so strong. She's hurt Tony. And I also think that, and then people might want to go back and look at this. She punches him, I think, on the opposite shoulder than he was holding up his arm in the challenge. So I don't know exactly what happened there.
I don't know.
I bet it does hurt to get punched by Sarah. I hope I never find out.
Yeah, but I mean, how sore could you be in a challenge that only went on for 10 minutes? So
I don't know. I think it was 15, in fairness. Mm-hmm. In fairness. Okay. I do want to ask about what went on the Edge of Extinction this week. For people who don't know, Mary is does not have any sort of uncomfortableness with announcing that she is a huge Boston Rob stan, right?
Yeah. Well, like I mentioned, yeah. I was casual for a while, so.
Yeah, you wear a Boston Rob necklace.
Well, I have a Boston Rob necklace. Not sure I.
She would
sure
love it if somebody would buy her that Boston Rob Zoom call.
Oh gosh, no! Don't spend your money on that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mary,
but I do look. I did look at the Boston Rob Zoom call options.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
You know.
So huge Boston Rob fan, and so Mary, can you just talk us through your emotions with watching Boston Rob compete in the Coconut Challenge on the Edge of Extinction?
Well, you know, I thought that the Porky Man was supposed to win or whatever. Was it Porky?
Portly.
Portly, right.
Portly.
Sure.
Why
sorry.
Did you feel like that being portly would give you an advantage in that challenge?
Well, because that's the, you know, that's the edit that we had seen from him running up and down the hill and getting the other
yes,
things.
Yes.
I don't know. I feel like with this challenge, if I was Boston Rob, I would have not even tried. Like, you're only going to embarrass yourself, probably, when you've got, now that you've got people like Tyson and Wendell back out here and Sophie and stuff like that. I feel like he did a great job, though, valiant effort. But I can't help but equate this to myself when I used to run cross country. And when I was running, I would just think the whole time about how could I feign an injury so that I could get pulled out of this. And I'm not saying that he did. Obviously, he really hurt himself. But I do think it's that kind of thing where, like, okay, I've hurt myself, so I have a great excuse for why I'm not going to be able to do well. Mm-hmm. And you know, they've been on the edge for a long time. You know, maybe he was sort of like, if I trip, I trip. And could be worse, you know?
He went slipping Rob, slipping Robbie on us?
I You know, it's possible. I just don't think it was necessarily the worst case scenario. I did, though. I was worried at first when I saw the blood. I was thinking that he was going to get pulled and that he was saying it's over for him in this entire game. I don't know if this arm injury is going to affect his chances to get back into the game, depending on whatever, you know, battle back challenge there is.
Yeah.
But look, I'm not going to hate on him trying to finish the challenge. Did we need to see it? Probably not. Could have probably just put that on CBS All Access. I know I'm not a huge fan of the concept of Edge of Extinction anyway, but look, it's nice to see that. Here's the thing. What else do you have to do? What else do you have to do? Go get your extra coconuts, show that you're not a quitter or whatever. And that's fine. I don't, yeah. Do I think that you need a t-shirt saying never quit? No. But if you want to make a necklace.
That is available. And you're referencing that. And the First Lady Podcasting was showing me that. There is a Boston Rob t-shirt to commemorate the moving of the coconuts.
Yeah, yeah. You know, never, ever, ever give up or whatever.
Are you
going
to get that, Mary?
No, I'm not. I'm not going to. I could needlepoint it. Maybe that would be something that would be cute. I like the concept of having obscure quotes or references.
What's the memorable quote? Never quit.
I don't really think it was that memorable. I was like, it's not. It's no. I may not be the strongest, but I can guarantee I'm tougher than every single one of them. It's not that, but.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you don't have to live up to your shirts. Right now, my shirt says FIFA World Cup Brazil. I don't play soccer. It's fine. You don't have to live. Just because he has a shirt that says never quit doesn't mean he had to go and do the challenge after it was over.
Okay.
I just want to know, where was Amber all during this? Was she not, you know, she decided just like, I'm not even going to bother with the coconuts?
Maybe she finished. Maybe she's done.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm not going up that hill again.
And by the way, isn't this like the most boring scene in the history of Survivor? Like, we already had it with the logs, and now this is the second time they're just retrieving stuff.
People like logs, Jordan.
No, people didn't like the logs. Who liked the logs?
A lot of people.
I liked the logs because it seemed like a much more legitimate challenge. Look, having run a marathon, I was trying to calculate how far they could have possibly gone to retrieve these because... You know, you saw them sort of walking around the edge of these islands and, you know, Rob, you probably have more experience and can give me some frame of reference for exactly how big this island is. But like, if you're making...
How do I know?
Well, I don't know. You've been on a Survivor beach before. I don't know. You get 100 yards that you can walk. But if you're going out of sight around this, you know, watery corner to pick up a coconut and come back and you have to get 20 coconuts, that's 40 different lengths of the trip. And so, you know, they're not going, I don't think they're going 20 miles. So it can't even be a half mile away. And what is this? Like a quarter mile there, a quarter mile back, maybe 10 miles total. Maybe. I don't know.
But you have to beat, like so many people. Like, I mean, and these are people that are very good athletes that are on Survivor. Like a normal person is not beating like a Natalie or a Parvati or a Tyson. Or like Yule on this game. Like these aren't normal people. And someone like Rob, who is very athletic, he's shown to be good at challenges on Survivor. He's not an endurance athlete. I'm not an endurance athlete. Like I coach cross country, but I couldn't do cross country. Like there's no way I think I'm behind Adam on this challenge.
Well, the key with these types of things is just, it's all pack attack. You get in the front, you stay with those people. And then at the very least, if you end up having to slow down a little, you've gained so much ground and the people who are farther in the back are just going to get farther away out of lack of motivation. So,
yeah, I don't even think this needed to be CBS All Access. I think this could have been like Jeff tweeting. Oh yeah. The people on the edge had to get coconuts and the six people who finished first got two fire tokens. And these are the six people and like tagged them in the tweet. I think that's all we needed from this scene.
Well, what's the way that you could have had this task and make it better, make it more interesting?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Make it more interesting. I think maybe why can't they be like cool challenges like a sumo at sea and then just put it on CBS All Access?
You want the people on the edge of extinction to do sumo at sea for fire tokens?
Yeah. Okay. I think that'd be fun.
All right. How about this? What if that instead of coconuts, it was a sort of like a holding pen of lobsters and they don't have like rubber bands on their pinchers, Mary. How about that?
Oh, great. I mean, that goes all the way back to HHH Pocket Crab. So that, you know, that would be certainly interesting. It adds a little element of danger. That gets a little Amazing Race. I think,
it's a little Amazing Race. Yeah.
But, you know, that's
what
cool.
What if they have to herd livestock?
Not for anything, Mary. If it got a little Amazing Race, that should be no problem for Rob, Amber, Ethan, Natalie.
Good point. Yeah, I guess they've all been there.
They should put an elephant out there.
Here's this for a thought. Like, how does this help? I can't do Rupert.
Pie pie.
Yeah, that'd be great. The elephants had to go through the water too, so they'd be fine. Mm-hmm. Here, look, how's this for an idea to fix Edge of Extinction a little? Because I think one of the main problems here is this like other game groupthink idea of they're going to get together and maybe want to vote for whoever comes back from Edge of Extinction at the end. So I think what we need to be doing is causing more dissension among the people on Edge of Extinction. And you're probably going to have to do this on CBS All Access, but yeah, maybe not. Maybe Sumo at Sea, maybe like the Coconut Chop Challenge. Do something like that on Edge of Extinction.
No more coconuts.
No, that would be a good use of the coconuts. They have all these coconuts out there. They should be chopping them. And this, you know what? This would be great too, because then the person who comes back, if everyone said, like if she's, let's say it's, I don't know, let's say Boston Rob gets back into the game because Mary's here on the podcast and that's her favorite player. Let's say Boston Rob's comes back and, like, I don't know, he said that Danny Boatwright is like the person who doesn't deserve to be here. Maybe he loses her vote and then the Edge person doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I just want them to be. To be more mad at each other. Maybe you use these fire tokens and say, like, look, you're only allowed to participate in the challenge to come back in the game if you have X number of fire tokens. And so the competition that's for the fire too. Tokens becomes way right. more intense.
Right.
And yeah, you know.
Well, what I do agree with is that the idea of, like, the Edge of Extinction group becoming, like, one tribe, I do think that that helps. If you're going to bring somebody back from the Edge of Extinction to sit in the final three, you don't want the block of 13 voting as a block of 13 because they have built such a camaraderie. So the more that you can do to sow dissension among the Edge of Extinction people, I do think that that would improve this idea of the Edge of Extinction.
Also, call me crazy, but if the Edge of Extinction people had more opportunities to get back in the game, then you would have, like, if you had Tyson come back a second time, even if he does end up winning the game, I don't think people would be as mad about his win because he was in the game for longer. He came back, he left, he came back again. Like, he, you know, he was with a lot more of the players. I think the people who never went to Edge of Extinction. Right. They wouldn't be as frustrated. So if you had more of a chance of people coming back into the game and spending more time in the game, I think that wouldn't be looked at as poorly. But look, bottom line, we don't need to fix Edge of Extinction. We just need to get rid of it. So,
mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
That is the best way to fix Edge of Extinction.
That was, though, in my interview with Ozzy, I thought that was one of the interesting things that we talked about was I had asked him about how, you know, I'm sure most people suspect that you feel like that Cook Islands was your season to win. But in the way he was talking about South Pacific, I had asked him, like, do you feel like that South Pacific, that was actually your game? And he said that, yeah, he felt like that was the game that he felt like he played the best. He played it exactly the way that he wanted to play it. And I think that the narrative around that season probably would have reflected it, where Ozzy, he sent himself to Redemption Island. He brought himself back and he figured out the way to master Redemption Island and came back in and won. Like, I really feel like that would have been, an interesting narrative in terms of talking about that win. I wonder what the reaction to that would have been.
I think it would have been similar to the reaction of Chris Underwood, where
I don't think so.
No,
I think it would have been received better.
Why? Because he's Ozzy?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about it because he's Ozzy. I think that Redemption Island as a twist should be less hated than Edge of Extinction, especially in Edge of Extinction's first season, because the people on Redemption Island were more incorporated into the game. You know, the players got to go to Redemption Island and watch the duels. They got to communicate with them. You know, advantages were being passed back and forth in an open way where you knew who it was coming from and knew who it was going to. Like, there was more playing between those different groups. And Redemption Island felt a lot more like a holding pen before you got out rather than Edge of Extinction, which feels more like you are out already and then you could come back from the dead, whereas Redemption Island felt more like Limbo.
Yeah, I would say also on in Redemption Island versus the Edge of Extinction, I feel like that Ozzy, you know, he sent himself there to go there and do something, won his way back, told them, hey, you guys are making a big mistake. You're going to send me out. He promised that he would come back. He did. He sort of like figured out the right way to play the people that came through. So at least I could say that there was probably more agency in terms of what Ozzy was doing on Redemption Island, where for Chris, I'm not sure other than like, hey, I'm going to get back into the game. I'm not sure necessarily how much of like there was like a master plan. I do understand that he came back into the game like with a plan of how to play the final six. But, you know, I'm not sure if that was like a big picture plan in terms of like the journey he wanted to take. But I will say that also that I'm planning on getting Chris Underwood for an interview this week. So we can talk to Chris a little bit about how he sees what's going on the Edge of Extinction this season. And we will find out later on this week. How about that?
I like it. Can't wait.
Okay. All right. Before we get into talking about some social media this week, spicy week on the social media, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. And those are our friends over at Noom. And what's great about Noom, it's that it's a habit change program that uses psychology to teach you how your mind works so you can understand why you make the decisions you make and feel empowered to make the change for good. Mary, you don't have to rely just on the Boston Rob rule book to understand your own psychology anymore.
Oh, man. Wow. Can add another book to the shelf.
Yeah. The great thing about Noom is that they're going to help you pick out the goals that are right for you, whether it's feeling better in your clothes, having more stamina to keep up with your busy life, being more in tune with your body's needs, or practicing more self-care, feeling confident. Noom is going to help personalize a program to help your aspirations become a reality. And they're going to give you physical examples like how to eat better, to feel better, to get more energy so you can enjoy exercise again, maybe even being able to enjoy going to move all of the coconuts from one side of your house to the other. They also give you psychological examples to help you feel good about your choices with an improved sense of self-worth and mood, and ways that you can be feeling more confident once you're back out in a crowd and feeling more comfortable in social situations, because it's a great fit right now, Noom, where it's not so easy to get to a gym to work on your fitness. You can be starting to make changes now during this time, because based in psychology, Noom teaches you why you do the things you do and empowers you with the tools to break the bad habits and replace them with better ones. It's all based on a cognitive behavioral approach. And Noom is forgiving because you're human. If you go off track, there's no shaming, just tips to get you back on track. It only takes 10 minutes a day. Over 80% of Noomers finish the program and have over a 60% of the people who have stuck with their goals for at least 1 year. It's super easy to do. You do it all on the app. You have a personalized coach, and your coach is going to be able to go back and forth with you with good information. It won't be like you're talking to the coach from Survivor, because you'll want to listen to everything that they have to say. There's a science to getting healthier. It's called Noom. Sign up for Noom, Noom.com/Rob. What do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/Rob to start your trial today. That's Noom, Noom.com/Rob. And then to get into talking about what's going on in the world of social media, let's check in with our great friend Jacob Sager Weinstein to kick off Survivor Social Media.
Tweets, baby, tweets, they just fill me with vim.
Jacob's gonna change it.
But I already set up the rhyme for Kim.
Then rhyme with somebody else.
Fine.
Tweets, baby, tweets, they're always my pick.
Sorry, we're going to plan C.
Seriously?
Tweets, baby, tweets, they're not Fody and Nachos.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Tweets!
Okay.
Yeah. Much bigger fan of Jacob Sager Weinstein whispering in his song than I am of whispering at Tribal Council.
Okay.
That was
right. All right. Mary, you have any issues with the whispering at Tribal Council? Subtitled whispering this week?
The subtitles is better than non-subtitles. I think, look, I'm going to come down on whispering is okay every once in a while, but I do think there needs to be a time limit. Second people start whispering, you got 2 minutes to whisper and that's it. And then we're cutting you off. Jeff needs to be the Denise and say, okay, we're done.
Okay, we're done. We're done. Jordan, what if we watched more foreign Survivor where we were used to the subtitles more?
I think that would prep people for the whispering and subtitles at Tribal Council. But I agree with Mary. It's too, once in a while, it's interesting. Like when Jeremy leaves, because he uses the safety without power, like you go back to the Edge of Extinction, the Julia vote, like that was a pretty interesting scene. And I think vote did change, but like, and I don't think anyone changed their vote here. So like, why was this such a big focus of the episode?
I totally disagree. I definitely think that Ben and Nick changed their vote at this Tribal Council.
I disagree with that.
Talk me through that.
Well, I think
where
I think
are you coming from?
I think that Ben and Nick are basically just working with Tony at this point. I mean, we see Ben telling Tony about the plan, and yes, it was after he won the immunity, but I don't think Ben even makes Tony aware of the fact that Kim was coming after him if he didn't want to get Kim out. And then yes, Nick was very flaky with his explanation to Tony. He did lie to him first, and you know, he was caught in that lie. But I mean, we go back to last episode and we see the fact that Nick and Tony were basically a pair. They were they were two out of the four people who voted Sophie out. I think that they're pretty firmly with Tony at this point, and I think that they were always going to do what he wanted to do.
All right, Mary, can you settle this?
I think that, well, in terms of whispering, I think that if it is a live tribal, that's great. If it's not a live tribal and they don't change their vote, don't even show us the whispering. Just cut to it. For this vote in particular, I think that it was more of a case of like they had a couple different plans on the board. Their plan going into this tribal was to vote out Kim. A lot of talking arose that, thinking like, oh, maybe they're trying to trick us. Maybe it's going to be Ben. Maybe it's going to be Sarah. Maybe whatever. And then it ended up settling back on what everyone had originally planned to do as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think votes changed. I do think that they like discussed that they could change, though.
Yeah. I talked a lot of this through on the feedback show with Shannon and Gus. And when we got to, Tony and Jeremy are talking and Jeremy tells Tony about how he's got the 50-50 coin. I think that set a lot of things into motion of like, oh, OK, we can't vote out Jeremy. And so got Ben and ultimately Nick, who didn't want to do a 4-4 split, on board with that. Kim is realizing that the jig is up. She's trying to change the vote around also. Denise is totally dug in on, no, it's got to be Jeremy. So I definitely think that a couple of those guys flipped their vote at Tribal Council.
I do think that if Ben and Nick had gone into Tribal Council originally wanting to vote for Jeremy, I think they made a mistake here by not doing it. I think that taking
even with the 50-50 coin?
Yeah, because then you know that Kim's the backup plan. Kim just goes out anyway. Like, and then you flush the coin and Kim goes out of the game. But I also, like I said it before, I think that they have to see Jeremy as, you know, obviously he's working closely with Michelle, but he's also been working closely with Tony lately. You take one of Tony's people away. And I think right now, as the person who I said before is in the number one spot right now in terms of who I think has the best chance to win if they get to the end, I think you have to take power away from that person, especially since he's immune and he can't be voted out.
Okay. All right. So in terms of first, I guess let's talk about some of the happier stuff this week in terms of social media. Kim Spradlin ended up tweeting out a picture of the delicious spread from the immunity challenge that she stepped down. She said it was a picture of the peanut butter. She says, from my calculations, approximately $2 million of PB. I mean, by my calculations, it looks like approximately about one fire token of a PB to me, Mary.
Yeah, well, maybe that this is a long con. She saw, she talked to Tyson. Tyson said, look, the key to getting back in the game was the peanut butter. So just if there's a chance that you have to have peanut butter, you need to take it no matter what the consequences are.
Mm-hmm.
We've poo-pooed the peanut butter before and we were on the wrong side of history. So I guess you have a point there, Mary.
Okay. All right. Also, you know, Tyson, who has been, you know, really very fun on social media all throughout the season, that he, I think we read this tweet a couple of weeks ago that he said that he tried to name the merge tribe Illuminati, but everybody was too scared. They could have pulled that off. Maybe the production was too scared.
What if he had named it Lou Malnati's?
Ooh.
Oh, okay.
You know, I don't think you want to mix Fiji and pizza, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a picture that was tweeted of by Ryan_Kaiser of Tyson and Parvati coming back with coconuts. Ryan used Tyson's signature News AF closing line, "We did it, guys." And Tyson responded, "Nick is so jealous of this at Parvati Shallow." So a callback to that once upon a time, the high school crush of Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Nick saw that tweet, though.
Okay. Yes. So we mentioned, so Nick, that I believe, did we talk about this last, that I do so many podcasts with the Patreon stuff and then with this. We talked about that last week, that Nick is off the Twitter, right?
It appears that he's off the Twitter. I don't think we didn't talk about it last week.
We did not. Okay, so Nick had left Twitter following last week's episode of Survivor. This week also, looks like Sarah Lucina and Ben and Denise have all left Twitter. That with lots of toxicity going on in the Survivor community. Denise made a statement. She said she's making a decision not to view Twitter for now. Just not worth it. So much love and support, but also so much judgment without true understanding of what happens in the game. You can call my actions rude, disrespectful, racist, whatever. Just remember, we're human. Mama D out. So the bad behavior of a few, Mary, causing a lot of the survivors to walk away from social media.
So let me ask you a question. Did you feel like you wanted to leave Twitter when, you know, people maybe were not appreciating some of your moves on Sequester?
You know, I didn't get any backlash from Sequester.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I like when I played Sequester the first time, I did contemplate like just, you know, leaving because sometimes it can be hard. It can be hard to hear people being negative. And I know there's a lot of talk about like, oh, they're, you know, they signed up for this. They're a celebrity. I don't think that anybody in life signs up to be hated, though. You know, they don't want that to happen. You think about, oh, I'm going to go play this game.
Some people do, but they mostly go on Big Brother. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah, if you're on Big Brother, then you, I'm not going to say you deserve the hate, but don't trap me into this. Not even as a joke. I think that it's hard when you have people who are being completely just mean, and then there's people who are going to voice their opinions that are just going to be different than yours, and, you know, that's life, that's going to happen. I think this might have a lot more to do with just the current time we're living in, where there's not as many escapes from the internet, and a lot of social media right now is in the job of connecting people. That's some of the only way that you can see and communicate and talk with, you know, other people that you know or you don't know. And so it can be hard when you're saying, I want to be on the internet, but I'm just getting a lot of hate for this show that's going on, and I don't have a real world escape from it, so I just need to cut that out.
Yeah. Look, I do get it, because that's once in a while, you know, people, they're binging old stuff, and I get messages from people, Mary, that say, hey, I'm watching Survivor the Amazon for the first time, and I just want to let you know I'm happy that you didn't win because I hate you, and it's infuriating. So I can only imagine what it's like to get more than one or two messages a week like that.
Well, and it's not just something right now that this may get too deep, but it's not something that's just going on in the Survivor or even reality TV community right now. There are
Riverdale
a lot of
community also.
adjacent, sure. There was, I know that over this past week, there was a celebrity, not a Riverdale one, but is friends with some Riverdale people, who was trending on Twitter and on TikTok for people just making fun of them. And, you know, there's lighthearted making fun of imitating someone's acting or whatever. And then there's like, this is just a person I hate. I hate their face. I hate everything they're in. They should, you know, kill themselves, whatever. And right now, when that's all over the place and that's the only thing anyone can look at, it can be really hard. And that's not... that's not great. So, you know, don't be a part of the problem of just bashing on people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the rhetoric that I saw on Twitter this week also surrounded the fact that people were calling out Denise and Ben for being racist. And I mean, you could look at Ben's game and when he wasn't, you know, he was refusing to talk to Jeremy, which I think is really bad social survivor play. But there's no, like, to me, there was nothing in that we saw in this episode that could be construed as racist. And then they were talking about Denise putting her hand up and wanting to end the Whispering at Tribal Council. I think a lot of people watching the show would like to end the Whispering at Tribal Council. And I'm sure if you're sitting there and you're trying to play, a strategic game, the whispering could sort of get annoying and you might not want to stand up and, you know, potentially have the vote change. So, and we saw Denise, of course, was voting for Jeremy there. So I think her getting up and talking to Jeremy may not have been great for her. So absolutely no racism. I think that could have been seen from this episode.
Let's also remind people that Denise is the same person that played an idol for Jeremy earlier this season.
Very, very good point.
You know,
yeah, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, we've seen instances
Ben and Jeremy
where
were friends through the beginning of the season. Like, hey, it's, you know, it's one thing to say, hey, I love Jeremy. He's awesome. Like, I wish that these people would work with my favorite person on the show. Okay, we get that, but let's not take it to a place where it does not need to go based on what we're seeing on the show.
Right, and like I don't think that Denise's, you know, snapping at Jeremy in that way was like great beneficial for her in the game. I don't think that, you know, ideally you would be able to have a little bit more of an even temper and realize that anything you say in the game, even if it's when you're stressed out or getting heated, could come back to bite you at any time. And I think that just happens in life. You know, I'm sure we've all said things on podcasts when we were fired up and then regretted it later. But there's a big difference between hating on someone for like a mistake they made in a game and conveying it as something that it's not versus actually confronting real social issues that are out there. And I think that's like, that's my main point, is if you're going to be harsh on the internet for a really, you know, there are definitely reasons and causes and exceptions to the rule, but like, just, I hate this person for no reason or because of a game move they made that wasn't great.
Yeah.
That's out of the line. I think people understand that.
And we had a similar conversation when Wendell was getting a lot of racism thrown his way. So it was sort of, you know, it was a different but similar situation where, you know, the fans were, you know, saying terrible things to Wendell online. Obviously anything like that is, you know, unacceptable and way over the line. But, you know, talk about just like Mary was just saying, talk about the player's games. If you would disagree with something that a player does in the game, you know, makes a move that you think was the wrong move or makes a move that you think might, you know, end up screwing them down the line, say it. That's fine. I mean, this is a strategic game. The strategy is meant to be analyzed. But don't say anything personally about players, either like giving them racist hate or calling them racist when there's no evidence that any of the players on this season did or said anything racist. Yeah.
I know it's easy to say, don't do these kind of things, Jordan, but if New York Jets head coach Adam Gase had a real Twitter account and not a burner Twitter account, Jordan, would you be able to, after each New York Jets football game, would you be able to not send mean-spirited tweets to Adam Gase?
I don't think I've ever sent mean-spirited tweets towards Adam Gase. Maybe Joe Girardi. Maybe a couple times.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, we're able to sit here and talk civil about Survivor, but I may have sent some mean-spirited tweets in my life to New York Daily News columnist Manish Mehta.
Yeah, you're not a fan of the Manish. I've seen you tweet the Manish.
I get so mad. Okay. All right. Sorry. Sorry about that, Mary. All right.
Manisha's the worst.
All right. Let's bring it back to a positive place. Let's check in with Malcolm. Malcolm says, hey, is your child texting about Survivor? Malcolm is explaining some of these terms that he's basically like the Phil T of Survivor, of that if your child is using these terms, here's what some of them mean. WTF, Mary, that means watch Tony flip. BTW, that means ban tribal whispering. BRB means Boston Rob's book. BDSM, I don't know why your child is texting that. Badass Denise Stapley Messiah. These are all according to at Malcolm WHW. TTYL is Tony teaches Yule Llama speak. And STFU is Sarah to finale undoubted.
Right. Well, hold on. BRB.
Boston Rob's book.
Boston Rob's book. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You have it nearby.
I wish. Look, these are all incredibly true. And if you think that they're jokes, they're not. I think that this is exactly like I have to tweet, you know, and talk to my friends and text them about WTF all the time.
So. Watch Tony flip. All right. So our in-house pollster, at RHA pollster, Rob has a pollster, asked people to then give us your suggestions for some other acronyms that your child might text. TTYL, at Justin Reality, says Tony time, you like? also, this is from Steph Alley writes, Tyson thinks you're lame, TTYL. What about NSFW?
That's already a Survivor thing, right?
Yes, NSFW. No, not from what I understand.
Search Fair Play's website.
Yes, this is from True Dork Times. There's a No Swing from Wendell. Purple Rock Pod, our friends said Nick shouldn't effing win at NSFW. Then JD Cub says Natalie Shines finale week. Those are things for NSFW. LMFAO is loving Michelle Fitzgerald again, obviously. That's from Pat Driscoll _. Just for Jordan from T Maximinimum. Lydia Morales for another opportunity.
Completely agree. That's a great tweet.
Okay. There you go.
Tweet of the week. You know, JK is Jordan Kalish.
Jordan Kalish. All right. Speaking of the pollster, RHA pollster, Tony ran away with the MVP award for the week, Mary. What percentage of the audience thought Tony should be the MVP?
Ooh, I mean, I'd give it at least like 82%.
82%. Jordan, you're higher or lower?
I'm going to go...
I mean, who else would it be this week?
I'm going to go higher.
Yeah. Higher. No.
I'm so bad at this game. I never win this game.
No. 74%.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking that I was going to go lower, but I thought 82 was a good number.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We also asked the listeners, okay, if the universe gives us Tony 4.0, which of the following innovations would you most like to see? A, Spy Crew, where Tony takes over with a disguise from the crew members of Survivor so he can listen in on the confessionals. B, the Spy Goat, where Tony spends a day or two talking about how a family of goats lives behind the shelter so he can rustle in the bushes making goat noises and everybody thinks that he's an actual goat. Or the Spy Boat, where Tony builds a bamboo raft with a hidden compartment. What would you like to see, Mary?
Well, see, I thought Spy Goat would have been trying to get someone on your side and be your secret spy and then telling them to blow up everything around the camp so that they would want to be the goat, but really they're spying for you. But I'd have to go Spy Crew. I think Spy Crew is great.
Spy Crew. Yeah. You're right. 57%. Pick the Spy Crew. All right. Be sure to follow RHA Pollster for all the updated polling information about the season. All right. Mary, are you ready to play the quiz? Now, last time you made up the quiz. This time you'll be back trying to compete.
I'm ready. I'm nervous, but I'm ready.
This is like Boston Rob being on the Island of the Idols and being now back in the game this season.
Look, it gets harder every year because there's just more episodes. Look, I never, ever, ever give up.
Okay.
Mary, is this four or five times for you? You've been on a bunch of times now.
You are like Boston Rob.
I think this is my fourth time, but this is only my third time playing since the quiz
all
last
right.
time.
I know, let's get into
it. You know, and I'm a little bitter about that, but it's fine. I feel like I should have. Well, I could have been the first three-time winner, but, you know, then that ship sailed because of his pink eye or whatever Jordan was dealing with.
Okay. It was pink eye.
What you had your
no,
eye.
No, it was
hurt.
It was very much so pink eye.
Okay. All right. Let's get into Twish.
Twish.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So Mary, you said you wanted to become the first 3-time winner. Is Liana did Liana win 3 times? I always forget. I mean, I think that Liana's won definitely 2 times. I'm not sure exactly. I probably should know. I am not the authority on the stats of this quiz. That is Rob's fact checker. But Mary, the 4 categories that we have today are 3-2-1, Chop Chop, The Zaps, and Andrea's Missing Idol. As always, you can go for 2. If you go for 2, you won't hear the multiple choice options. And if you're wrong, your opponent can steal a point. If you want to hear the multiple choice options, a correct answer will be worth 1 point. So, Mary, where do you want to go first?
Okay. I'm trying to think what these could mean. I noticed that we do not just get the names of the season. So that's okay. You know, I think I'm going to go 3-2-1. Because at least I think I know what season that might be.
Okay, and we're going to the season that you probably thought it would be, Exile Island. The episode is Perilous Scramble from April 27th, 2006, 14 years ago Monday. In one of her greatest moves, Cerie Fields orchestrated a 3-2-1 vote at the final 6, sending home Courtney. Who are the other 2 castaways that received votes at that tribal?
Okay, let me think about this real quick. I know that Shane was on the outs, and so I think he voted for Danielle. So there's Danielle, and then who voted for Courtney? So Cerie voted for Courtney. I think Aris voted for Courtney. So who is the other? Oh, well, Terry's still in the game for this point, so probably Aris got some votes as well. That's my guess. So I think Aris and Danielle.
Aris and Danielle for 2 points is correct. Very good job. And you got everybody's vote 100% correct. So very nice job on that question.
Well, it's not too bad when you know that Terry just kept throwing votes at Aris for a while.
That's true. Okay. And also one of the most memorable votes in Survivor history by my estimation. So great job knowing who every single person voted for. That's impressive.
Yeah. You know, Mary, I am on quite the hot streak.
I know. That's why I'm nervous. Today. I'm nervous because you've been on such a hot streak.
I know, but this is now you bringing out like the final boss.
Rob, we have Chop Chop, The Zaps, and Andrea's Missing Idol.
Because I don't think we have anybody else booked this season that can beat me. So I'd like to run the table. So let me hear one more time.
We have Chop Chop, The Zaps, and Andrea's Missing Idol.
Let's go with Andrea's Missing Idol.
Okay, so we're going to Survivor Kara Moen, The Beginning of the End from May 1st, 2013, 7 years ago Friday. Andrea Belke won the immunity challenge and along with it a note that ended up being an idol clue, which she shared with various other players. Who ended up finding the idol and giving it to Andrea?
I believe that was Eric Reichenbach.
Eric Reichenbach is correct. They were like basically right next to each other where he found it. And for some reason, he decides to give it to Andrea. He just loves giving away idols. So
he didn't want it.
No, but that was, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter because he gets medevaced anyway. But probably not a great idea to not want the idol at that point of the game. But here we go. We have a Chop Chop and the Zaps. Mary, this is your last multiple choice question.
Shoot. And I knew the Andrea one, but I was thinking it was going to be about the vote, so I was afraid about that. All right, Chop Chop, that's probably Coconut Chop Challenge. Yikes, I don't know. That could be anything. Gosh. Okay, let's go with the Zaps. Boston Rob, Totem of Boston Rob, give me your give me your power.
All right. So, of course, we're going to Redemption Island. The episode is a mystery package from April 27th, 2011, 9 years ago Monday. After the first tribal council vote of this episode, a mystery note was revealed saying that there would be another challenge and a vote right away. Boston Rob won the challenge, who was then voted out just after becoming the last Zapatero left in the game.
Just after the last. Okay. So.
So it's
the,
who was the last Zapatero remaining?
Okay. So. I know who all the Ometepe people were who were at the end. The question is, what was the order in these two votes? All right, so I've narrowed it down to who it could be, so I don't need the multiple choice because that's just gonna give me the last four zaps. Shoot, which one was which? All right, well it's either Steve or Ralph. This is 50-50.
You could use your 50-50 coin.
Oh, well, great. Yeah. I'll use that. All right. I'm just going to have to guess. I cannot. It's the same episode. I can't remember who is who. Let's go Steve. I don't know.
So Steve is one of the Zaps who was here in this episode. And he is the correct answer. Do you get another 2 points?
That was close.
Risked it. You got the biscuit. It is 4-2. Very, very dangerous there. Rob could have stolen a point if you had said Ralph. So, Rob, you get the final question. It is Chop Chop. We're going to Survivor Token Jeans. They both went bananas from April 30th, 2009, 11 years ago Thursday. Who won the Token Jeans version of the Touchy Subjects Chop Challenge?
Okay. This is a risky spot here for me because I feel like I need to hold serve and get it. But I could, if I blow it, then Mary could get it and open up a 5-2 lead on me and I'd basically be done. But this is winners at war.
Winners at war!
Yeah. So I'm going to say that I believe it was Taj.
So Taj is incorrect. Mary, you have a chance to steal a point.
Oh, no. I would have also guessed Taj. well, I mean, Coconut Chop, that's generally someone who's liked by everyone. Oh, no. I don't know. JT.
JT is incorrect. It's actually someone who I'm surprised didn't chop his own rope. Stephen Fishback was the winner of that challenge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, Rob, you and Steven both.
Yeah, you said it was somebody who was well-liked.
I said who won the Token Jeans version of this challenge.
Mary said that.
Yeah. So,
an exception to everything.
Oh, well.
Yeah. So, good thing for Rob that Mary did not steal the point because she would have had a 5-2 lead, but she does have a 4-2 lead going into the final round. And, of course, we are going to do Kim Spradlin trivia here. Rob, you're in a position that you haven't found yourself in a lot this season. You are trailing. Pick a number from 1 through 4. This is going to be true or false.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
2.
Okay. So, we're going to number 2. Kim had an idol on one world, but never used it. True or false?
I'll say it was true.
True is correct. She was immune at the final five and didn't have to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So she was actually immune at the final five and final six, I believe. So, Rob, you are now down 4-3. Mary, Kim is the only female winner in Survivor history to win 4 individual immunity challenges in her winning season.
In her winning season. Man, remember how I said one world is my blind spot?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. I mean, who else has 4 in a winning season? I mean, that sounds likely. I just can't think of someone. I'm going to go true. I have no idea.
The answer, unfortunately, is false. It was Jenna Maraska who won 4 individual immunities. So it is still 4-3. Here are the stakes here, and I like stakes. Rob has to answer these next two questions correctly to win. If he gets the next one wrong, he loses. If he only gets one of them right, we go to a tiebreaker.
Okay.
So, Rob, Kim voted in the majority at every tribal she attended in One World.
Kim voted in the majority in her tribal council that she attended. She's on the right side of the vote. I'm trying to think if there was anything with splitting an idol. I don't think that there was. I'm just trying to think this through. I believe the answer is yes.
You are correct. It is true. She was in the majority at every tribal she attended. It is a 4-4 game, and Rob, you get to answer this final question for the win. If not, we go to
a
tiebreaker.
Can I step down for peanut butter?
That is not an option on this quiz. So Kim won the final vote against Sabrina and Chelsea, 8-1-0, with only Troyzan voting for Sabrina.
Okay. The answer to that question is false.
Rob, you have come back and you have won another week here.
I'm sorry, Mary.
On this week in Survivor history. Sorry, do you know who the other vote for Sabrina was?
I believe it was Leaf.
That is correct. Yes, Leaf was the vote for Sabrina. It was a 7-2 vote.
Troyzan was very persuasive.
Did he convince Leaf the vote to vote for Sabrina?
Yes. Yeah. Mary, I'm sorry.
Good for Troyzan.
I know
how competitive you are.
It's out of my control. I know. I'm very sad. Oh.
No.
Mary, you will one day become a 3-time winner of this game. I'm pretty sure.
It was a bad break where this was not Mary's cup of tea.
It was not my cup of tea. Gosh. And I would have thought, I don't even know if I could have gotten those right, because I felt like Kim was on the right side of the vote for everyone.
She's that good.
Yeah, she played a really good game. I still think the best. I know that Antonio was making a case against it last week. I'm still of the opinion that she's played the best single season game in Survivor history.
Yeah, you know, I was actually a little surprised. So I was listening to I mentioned this before we came on, that I was listening to there's a Ringer podcast with the great Mallory Rubin and Jason Concepcion, and they were talking about their favorite players and their favorite seasons, which is a good listen for if you're the kind of Survivor fan that's an hour and a half into Twitch. And so they were talking about Kim, and that I believe it was Jason was talking about how that actually her win, the competition argument was brought up. I was like, boy, I can't believe that's widely talked about, that the level of competition in One World is not great.
I also do think part of it is that she potentially made other players look bad who potentially could have been good players. I don't think there were like stars on that season by any means. But
throw out a couple of names. Who were some of the people that
I think Sabrina could have been a pretty good player on another season. Yeah. I think early on she was fine. I mean Troyzan's not a. I mean, we saw Troyzan play again, and it wasn't great, but he had his moments.
Makes it to the finals in another season with all stars.
Yeah. If Colton doesn't get medevaced, I think maybe Colton could be some competition if at least strategically. I mean, look, I'm not making the case that it's a great season. There's plenty of players that were recruits that should not have been on Survivor, and I definitely think that it's not a great season in terms of the competition. Yeah. But I don't think it's necessarily that she was playing against like children.
No. I said this with Shannon yesterday, that I also think that the game of Survivor has evolved. And I think in the way that the game has gone, it has gone in a direction which I think does not play to Kim's strengths, which is, an impeccable, charismatic social game. And I think that it actually has evolved to a game that is actually more suited to Tony's strengths, which is chaos, a million advantages, unpredictability, crazy votes, live tribals. I feel like that the era in which she played, she was like a perfect person for that era. But I do feel like that it has gotten harder for Kim to win and not easier.
Uh-huh. But you know what? I've received some interesting information, Rob.
Yes, go
from
on.
From Frau Mary, I have made a mistake on the Twitch quiz because Kim voted for Tarzan at the vote relief went home. So I was wrong. Kim did vote in the minority at a vote.
Well,
so
hold on. So this, I mean, what are you saying now?
I still think that Kim played the best single season game in Survivor history.
Right.
But
well,
I think
that's fair. Okay, then we're on the same page.
So, okay, so this would have been, so actually the answer should have been, I think that, doesn't Mary win now? Because that was the first question.
I think that's a tie, right?
Yeah. The call on the field was I won. You can't go back now into the middle of the game.
I think that Jeff Probst has shown you can go back and look at the tapes and realize that somebody,
not after the rest of the game has been played. That this is like that there was a touchdown in the third quarter that you're overturning and now giving the win to somebody else.
That's fine. I just want the record to stand, you know? Let
the record show that there's an issue with Jordan's hosting and question writing.
So it's a tie. So we go to the tiebreaker, right?
No. We're not playing more. We're not doing more quiz.
No, we don't need to do more quiz. I just want to point out before the audience comes for you and says that Mary didn't deserve to be hated.
No, you don't have to come for me.
She didn't lose.
At Jordan Kalish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. At Dick Wilson.
Mm-hmm. That's fine. You know, you get dragged out of sequester for doing nothing wrong. You lose a quiz because Jordan messes up.
Are you talking about yourself? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, well. All
right. You don't want to do the I do have a tiebreaker.
No, I'm going to just lose the tiebreaker. At least this way I can pretend in my mind that I could have won.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mary, what else do you have coming up this weekend?
Oh, well, I'm, Riverdale's going, it's going somewhere. I don't know about going strong.
I saw a post of one of the stars of Instagram walking around with a Survivor buff. Did you see that?
One of the, what, who? Who is that?
A Riverdale actor is wearing a Survivor buff around. Eric Reichenbach, let me see if I can see if they were tagged on it.
What season?
I think somebody was saying that it was a Shapira buff.
Oh, wow.
Oh, well, I mean, that's a great buff.
Let me see. I'm doing a Twitter search for the word Shapira because it doesn't get posted much, I don't think. Let me see if I can find it here. You do your plugs and then I'll talk about see if I can find this.
Mary, yeah. We already know the first Survivor winner you followed on Twitter. We have covered this before that it was Boston Rob. Who's the second Survivor winner you followed on Twitter?
Oh, second Survivor winner. Is probably, I don't know if I followed that many Survivor winners. So it could have been, it's probably Tyson. Tully Tyson.
Tyson is correct. You're on fire today. You deserve, and look, the thing is, here's the thing with that question, Kim voted in the majority at every tribal she attended. If I had looked at the Wikipedia page correctly and saw that she didn't vote in the majority, since she was part of the vote split, I probably wouldn't have even asked that question. So like, I wouldn't have done that for true or false because it's not really a great question if she was technically part of the majority plan, but she didn't vote in the majority. But my Twitter, as Rob has said, is at Jordan Kalish. If you want to come for me, I did mess up. That's fair. I won't leave Twitter. I will still be here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people look, even the greats, like I'm watching the Michael Jordan documentary. He didn't make every shot. Yeah. You had Dennis Rodman rebounding for him.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So is Frau Mary the Dennis Rodman in this equation?
One of your longtime favorites,
Dennis Rodman.
Yeah. And you're like the Pippin.
Yeah.
I have no idea what that even means.
Okay. So, Eric Reichenbach tweeted back on I thought this was like a quarantine thing. This is not recent. On July 15th, 2018, Eric Reichenbach tweeted, "Wonder if Riverdale's Archie at KJ_APA. Am I saying that right? APA?
I think it's KJ APA. I don't know.
KJ APA is training for Survivor. If so, we're going to need a lot more votes and at least 2 hidden immunity idols to take out Hiram Lodge, hashtag survivor, hashtag Riverdale. And there's a picture of Eric Reichenbach. He's taking a screenshot from Instagram of KJ Appa, says the tribe has spoken, and is wearing a survivor buff on his head. So,
wow. Yeah. Wait, is it a Shapira buff?
Well, I believe so. And so KJ Appa responded to Eric Reichenbach on July 18, 2018, and said, get me on Survivor. And then me, not realizing that this is a 2-year-old conversation, was tagged in a tweet from the great Dino Andes 3 days ago that says, that looks like a Shapira buff. Heart eye emoji at Rob Cisternino. So,
wow, that's, you know,
silly me. I didn't realize that this was a 2-year-old conversation until I'm just looking at it now.
Is it really a Shapira buff, or is it just red? Is there any evidence that it's Shapira?
I would have to. I was really zoom in.
I don't know how well Archie would do on Survivor. I mean, KJ would probably do fine. I think Archie would be. He would be like woo. I think he'd be a very strong woo comparison. I mean,
he looks like it's day 38 of Survivor right now in this picture.
Yeah. Wow. This is crazy that Eric has that. I mean, pulling out the Hiram Lodge info. Yeah. It sounds like he's got a bit. Maybe I should reach out to Eric and get him the Riverdale treatment that Kirsten and I have been doing. We just had Mike Bloom on. So yeah,
is Hiram Lodge the Gargoyle King?
He was not in Gargoyle King costume, but he definitely had to do with the Gargoyle King. So he was involved. He's kind of the man behind. He's like a, you know, he's not gonna really do the thing himself, but he'll hire someone. That's kind of his MO. But yeah, there. Hiram Lodge is kind of like the Lex Luthor of Riverdale.
Okay.
Sounds like a hotel. Like, I'm staying at the Hiram Lodge.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're running out of time for this episode, Mary.
And material.
Yeah, I'm looking up 2-year-old Twitter conversations.
Yes. All right. So check out what's going on over on Kowski Cast. Anything else, Mary?
No, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. Let me know if there's ever anyone that you want to see on that show, any Survivor people or whatever. That's always fun.
Okay.
But, yep.
All right.
Nothing else.
Mary, always fun getting to catch up.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Okay. And Jordan, of course, looking forward to only a couple more weeks of Twitch this season.
I know. We're really getting down to it. We have two more weeks left, some good guests coming up, and looking forward to the rest of the season. And you know what? I'm putting – you all know I'm rooting for Tony at this point. That would be amazing. But, you know, just give us good, entertaining episodes, and I hope that The Edge doesn't really screw things up at the end this time.
All right. There you have it. At Jordan Kalish. We've still got a lot to do. Robin and Kiva need a podcast this weekend. Plus, The Wiggle Room, Josh Wiggler, will be back to listen to everything from the week 12 Wandoff. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.